hopefully now recovered from the Chiefs' loss to New England. See what he's up to, variety of methods. Cover the Register Guard sports section like today, online, registerguard.com. DuckSports.com on Twitter, Austin Meek. Actually, I think they still use at Austin Meek, RG. Austin Meek, how are things?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing good. How are you?
Awesome. So I saw on Twitter Sunday, I don't know how this came up, you tweeted out your top cover songs by Weezer, and the top one was Tears for Fears. And from my generation, from Loving the Hurting, songs from the Big Chair, their early stuff, got to see him in Philly. So explain where all that came from, because, well, I was intrigued.
Well, when you told me that, okay, so explain to people what you told me this morning, the two bands that you saw live in concert.
Yeah, in Philly, and it's so funny because it's more than 30 years ago, and my at-the-time girlfriend and I kind of partied a lot, so things get a little fuzzy. I texted her week. I still haven't figured out where I saw them. I think it was the Valley Forge Music Fair, but I saw Tears for Fears, the Hooters, a Philly band, and Hall & Oates, and Hall & Oates, about 1988. So, I mean, it was an awesome show, but like I said, I'm twice your age or 25 years older than you, so I'm always curious as to your connection.
Just hearing that gave me a mental picture of 80s Steve in like a pastel blazer and a big gold chain. Was that you, Steve? Was that your look in the 80s?
I never did the gold change. I never accessorized, but I absolutely had the powder blue blazer like I was up for a role in Miami Vice.
Well, so, you know, to bring it back to my own childhood, as a child of the 90s, Weezer was a band that I saw in concert, I'm not ashamed to admit, in Omaha, Nebraska, when I was like a junior in high school, when like their first album came out. It was the talk of my high school back in like 1998 or something. So they recently came out with an album of a bunch of covers from like the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. So it's been the subject of quite a bit of joking and derision on social media. So I just had to join the fray.
I love it. That's awesome. So here we are. It's 3:08 on Tuesday. To this point, nobody else has left the Oregon softball program. And as sarcastic as it sounds, it's not without merit. So regardless of the school or circumstances, you've covered college sports for a while now, and, you know, in multiple places. Do you recall anything similar to this as players, as far as this many players just leaving after a coaching change?
Well, the day's still young. As you said, it's only 3:00, so there's still plenty of time for somebody to leave today, although they're kind of running out of players
right.
to leave. It's like anybody who's left is a freshman or a transfer who's come into the program. Most of the holdovers now are gone. It is very unusual. I can't think of a situation right now that would parallel it in terms of just the percentage of the roster that has turned over from last year. It's basically Haley Cruz now is the only player who was part of that Pac-12 championship team last year who's still around. It's pretty unprecedented. If you applied that on the same scale like a football team, you know, 9 players on a softball roster is almost half of your roster, you know, maybe 40% of your roster. So on a football team, that'd be like 40 players leaving. It's incredible. I don't think I've ever seen attrition and transfers on this scale before.
You know, in your Sunday piece, you said something that I've heard a lot. I mean, you're not looking to push a narrative, and, you know, I'll get to some of the numbers you presented. But again, without knowing for sure, you know, this seemed like a very joyous, unified group of players. You mentioned the departures. So regardless of who's at fault, can we say it's kind of difficult not to connect some of the dots to the coaching change? I know nobody will come out and say it, but I feel like there's no way around it.
Well, sure. I mean, obviously, if Mike White were still here, then we'd be talking about Oregon maybe as the preseason number one in the entire nation. So all of the turnover that we've seen has flowed in some way, shape, or form out of the coaching change. And it's kind of come in two waves. You know, there was the initial wave of players who left in the fall, and that wasn't a big surprise. I think we all knew that there would be some changes after Mike White moved on. But I think the surprising part is how this has continued now up until, you know, we're a couple weeks away from the start of the season, and we still have players leaving the team. And it makes you ask, what has happened just in the last few weeks that has prompted players like Maggie Ballant and Alexis Mack and Mia Camuso to move on? You know, a couple of those players were there on the first day of practice, were doing interviews, talking about, you know, why they had chosen to stay. And then it turned around a few days later and decide to leave. So it's certainly you know, one of the weird parts about this, the part that makes you scratch your head, is the fact that several of these players, you know, were here all through the fall and then just before the start of the season have decided to move on.
Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So your Sunday piece about revenue, perhaps the numbers behind the collapse of the negotiations with Mike White. So like you said, it doesn't mean Oregon could not have matched what Texas paid Coach White. But what would you tell like a layperson who hasn't done the research in kind of the difference in revenue and profit between what you discovered between Oregon and the University of Texas?
Well, Texas has the biggest athletics budget in the nation. Their budget is about $220 million a year. Oregon's budget is about $120 million. So there's a significant revenue gap between those two schools. And I always say, nobody is going to feel sorry for Oregon.
Yeah.
When you've got the resources and the facilities that Oregon has, when you have Phil Knight as your primary donor, you're not getting sympathy from anybody. But that being said, it's true. Oregon doesn't have the resources that Texas has. So if you're Oregon, you know, and you've got a school like Texas coming after one of your coaches, you do have to be a little bit strategic in terms of when can you match that offer and when do you say, you know what, okay, we're going to have to let him go because we can't keep up with Texas. Now, it's always a matter of scale. You know, if it was a football coach that Texas was coming after, we'd potentially be talking about millions of dollars. When it's a softball coach, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's a different scale, and I think it's totally valid to say, even though there is this resource gap between these two schools, could Oregon have come up with the money to pay Mike White what he was asking for? I think that is a valid question.
You know, on Sunday, I ran into some people and who were concerned about softball, and then it was so ironic reading your title. It's and another guy says, but we could hope for a big season from baseball. So the title of your piece was UO Sure Could Use Baseball Success. I know it's as hypothetical as anything, but and I know there's an option for next year. If you had to kind of make a guess, if Oregon has a year this year like last year, what would be your confidence level George Horton would be the coach next year?
You know, Oregon is not obligated to anything with George Horton beyond this year.
Right.
I think if they miss the tournament again this year, I will be surprised if they exercise that option for 2020. I feel like this is a, you know, a make the tournament or bust year for Oregon baseball. But I also am aware that I've said that before. You know, if it were me, I probably would have moved on by now. And I say that as somebody who likes George Horton personally. You know, I think he's a good coach and I think he's a good guy and he's, you know, he's had a lot of success in the past and may still turn it around, but the last few years, we just haven't seen it. You know, they've been on a kind of a slow but steady downward trend. So I do think it is kind of a make-or-break season for Oregon baseball, doesn't necessarily mean that they got to get to Omaha, but certainly you would think they would need to get back in the tournament.
Yeah, yeah, and like you said earlier, as far as the character of the man, I don't even think that's a discussion. So couple final thoughts for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. On to the women's basketball program. Now fourth in the country, leading the conference. You know, we talk with Coach Graves each Monday, and, you know, we've heard about the big three. Now you've got Satu Sabali and Erin Boley just upgrading their game. Lydia Giomi, one of the bigs, is coming around. It seems like there's no monster this year, be it Notre Dame or UConn. They seem vulnerable as far, I mean, they're really good. So reasonable for a fan of that program to be like, you know what? All my chips are in. Why not hope for all of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Oregon is in kind of that small group of contenders that you would not be surprised at all if they're in the Final Four. You'd not be surprised at all if they're cutting down the net. As you mentioned, UConn doesn't look like, you know, the invincible powerhouse that they have been in recent years. We're seeing a little more parity at the top of the women's game, where it's not one school and everybody else trying to catch up. It's a group of schools there at the top. And I think Oregon still has a little work to do to really play their way into that conversation. I thought they took a big step this year by beating Mississippi State, because that's one of the schools you would put in that group.
Yep.
You know, they're still going to have to, if things go as planned, they're going to be in the same place they've been the last 2 years, in the Elite Eight, and they're going to have to show that they're ready to take that next step. But if I'm an Oregon fan, you know, it's almost to the point where it's getting a little bit hard to really be engaged with the Pac-12 race, because Oregon just hasn't had a lot of drama in the Pac-12 so far.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you watch the games, I mean, the Pac-12 network people, the national people, they love this program. Lastly, Super Sunday, Pats and Rams, we know, you know, L.A. going for their second ever Super Bowl win. Brady for his sixth. We know the storylines. Is this Gronk's last game? But from your chair, do you have a rooting interest or maybe a lean as far as who you think needs to clear room in their trophy case?
Oh, you know, I guess I've cooled off a little bit since last week. If you recall, last week I was still pretty bitter about the Patriots. Don't get me wrong, I'm still rooting for them to lose. I'd still much prefer to see the Rams win. But I, you know, my rage about the Patriots is not burning quite as hot as it was a week ago. I don't know. I hope it's a good game. I hope that the Rams can hang with the Patriots. You don't know about a team like the Rams, who hasn't really been on that stage before. I mean, the thing you know with the Patriots is they're going to show up. You know, they're not going to get embarrassed. They're not going to get blown out. The Patriots will do their part. The Rams, it's just, you know, it's hard to know. They've had such a good season. I think their defensive front with Aaron Donald, their secondary, I think defensively, you know, they'll be able to hold up well enough. I don't, you know, Jared Goff, who knows? I mean, you know, the guy we watched at Austin Stadium playing for Cal, you know, he looked like he was going to be a bust. He's had a great year. Super Bowl is just a different stage, you know. You don't really know how a guy's going to respond to that, but aside from certainly not rooting for the Patriots, I'm just rooting for a good game.
All right, well, history balances itself out. You heard it here first. 17 years ago, it was the greatest show on turf, and this annoying upstart from New England beat the Rams. Now the upstart from L.A., I'm telling you, they're going to knock off the Patriots on Sunday. So
bring it full circle.
Take that for what it's worth, and I think you know what that's worth. Hey, Austin, always a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of the week, and as always, look forward to catching up soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Take it easy.